With bars in front of it, maybe.
As long as he's got a hat on.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have a hat on, I'm probably dead.
That's not a Bud Light.
I wish it were, yeah.
That's a part-time tool.
I have Coors Light and Ultra in my Diet Coke vending machine in my garage.
That's always much better than that.
Well, I did, I got three different beers, Bud Light, Coors Light, Mick Ultra, and then I have two pops. And then my refrigerator's got booze in it, so if you wanna make a big drink.
No, no, that's something.
So.
That's something next to June 13th, yeah. No, this is the awards for the.
You should in the summer, do some fire, we do fire, have a couple beers.
I had, when I was a custodian at the, primary school. The old Coca-Cola.
You're gonna have the brush.
Sky blue, and you had to pull, like, pull a pound box, like, a little machine down like this. It's cheap, it was a nickel. And because that's the only thing, so you put a nickel in. Open it like this, and like, 36 Pepsi Cola was the old fashioned bottles. And that was awesome.
Well, Tommy's got a Coke.
As you do.
I decided to put the old fashioned bottles in there.
Yeah, 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 I love.
It was my grandfather's, but then, you know, he got it.
I'm sorry. And they, were blessed, so, we're a patriot, I see, and I haven't seen Dave in a couple of years.
Young Dave?
Young Dave, yeah, who's at, Eric's, I don't know.
Okay.
Hello, Tom.
Hi, Dave.
Here is the Wizard of Oz, we're looking up to the great Oz up there, the great glorious Oz, Tom.
I'm the great Oz. Don't pull the curtain back.
That's actually Riley, right?
It's people on the scene, right, behind the curtain.
Debbie, I think we're ready, we're ready.
Recording in progress.
Mayor and, Burner, right? Welcome everyone to the, council workshop on, May 24th, 2022. Debbie, please call the roll.
DeGeronimo?
Sure.
Brinzel?
Here.
Narducci?
Here.
Togliatti?
Here.
Tracus?
Present.
Verwerka?
Here.
Walt Chanelitz?
Here. Welcome everyone, and, of course, we had a, have a, an addition to the workshop site, an all-important addition, legislation, regarding the proposal of our, the, health insurance and other insurances, for the, employees for the next 2 years, and it's ordinance number 2022-76, and I guess, Eric, should we discuss it, or should we introduce it?
I wonder if we should, just take care of liquor license. Transfer first, and if there's any, unless there's somebody, oh, there's no one here, okay, that doesn't matter. Yeah, we should have a discussion, because, some Bridget's credit, and Maggie and Vern, they put an extraordinary amount of time and effort into this, trying to bring something up. The healthcare committee also, participated, and there's no good solution to any of this, as far as I'm concerned. It's just something, it's a matter of, moving forward and keeping, making sure that our employees are well taken care of. At the same time, we always have to take that balancing act of what taxpayers are paying. And so, it's been a very, maybe it'd be appropriate at this time to have, Bridget maybe give a summary as to the process, or Maggie, I don't care who does, but whoever wants it. At least introduce the concept of the information to council so that we can proceed before discussion.
Very good. I think if everybody read the memo that came out, it was quite enlightening, and what a great job to get to start off at 9.45%, get it down to 5% and get it for 2 years. Quite a bit of progress. And if you just, it seemed like the good work was done by all to get it to this point. I mean, like you say, it's not. You never have a situation where you're looking at reduction of costs. gaps and everything, and that's just the reality of the world. So probably, they can imagine since they first taught this.
One of the challenges, we have to make sure that as information becomes more available and through technology, we understand more of what's going on in the information business. We're able to refine our needs, refine our expectation, and make sure that we're getting good value. We're not paying for other people's insurance. We're paying for our people's insurance. We're off the reservation a little bit, but we're moving in the right direction. So we're going to constantly, employees are paying a little bit more. Everybody's going to feel this pain, and we have more competitive rates, but through an analysis and understanding, this is a direction that everyone decided to take at this point.
No, and it's 5% increases below the inflation rate, which is going on now. So, thinking of that perspective, it's job well done. So, again, without further ado, Bridget, we'll let you leave the presentation for us.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. So, essentially, the healthcare committee, worked with Oswald, our broker, to, first we took a look at our renewal, which came in at that 9.45%. We took the plans, or the renewal out to market, thank you, Dennis. And essentially, the market responded. The market definitely, we learned that Independence is a city that a lot of carriers find to be very attractive. Not just carriers, but brokers alike. And we're really the type of group that, I think for the ERC Health in particular, they see us to be extremely favorable for the fact that we bring positive risk, I think, into the pool. So when you're looking at ERC Health alone, and Rob, you can speak to this as well, it is a pool of risk. So it's a pool of different employers, and we're one piece of that pool. So I think that ultimately what ERC Health is saying to Anthem, ERC Health is saying to the City of Independence right now is, we have found you to be a very valuable partner, and we would like to continue that partnership. They feel that by putting, this two-year deal on the table at the 5%, that speaks to partnership, and they're hoping that can carry through 2 years. Now, I should also make mention that we do have the opportunity to take a one-year deal. That one-year deal is at a 2.5% increase. We did not configure all the contributions or include that portion into this memo because ultimately the healthcare committee feel strongly like the two-year deal would be best, and that's what they're recommending to council, so that's what we're sharing with you today. I will say that, after we got to the point where we were looking at that 5% increase, and then you have a carrier such as Medical Mutual on the table that's offering a 0% increase, we realized as a committee that, we needed to, in a sense, take on some of that burden in terms of cost if we wanted to keep Anthem ERC. We couldn't just look to the city to pay that additional cost if we have 0% on the table. So that's when we decided to get a little bit more creative, and we looked at plan design for one. We worked with Oswald to essentially come up with a few options, and the option that seemed to really kind of stick best was to look at that PPO plan where we have a $250 deductible currently, and bump that $250 deductible up to a $500 deductible, and then alike for the family plan, you bump that one up, halfway as well. So that essentially what we're doing now is we're moving our plan and the deductible, so the employees share along with the market. So when you think of an actual doctor's office visit today, a lot of them are going to cost you $250. So for someone to go once, they're almost meeting their deductible. Now it's actually putting a little bit more, stake onto the employee then to help pay for that, the cost of that plan and that visit. Ideally, what that does is it helps to mitigate some of the cost, and then it also helps to reduce some of the risk that the city is inheriting by having such a rich plan in this. So that was the first item that we looked at. Then we looked at the way that we're currently structured in terms of the employee cost share. So traditionally we've had the single and then family plan option. We have, as a committee, my understanding is, looked at building out additional tiers in the past. However, it didn't make a whole lot of sense for us to make any adjustments to the tier structure, to the way we were structured in the past. This year it did. So really by moving from just single to family and building out additional tiers, so now we have single and family, or the single, we have employee spouse, we have employee child or children, and then you have family. So that's a four-tier structure, which again, what it's doing is it's helping to, in a sense, spread out the cost of the increase in a way that more so formulates and speaks back to the way that our claims, in a sense, are being held within the carrier's, you know, risk. So ultimately, looking at it, if we said, all right, you know, as an employee only, your cost share is going to, that's going to actually make sense based on the number of employees that we have in the employee-only pool, and then the amount of claims that are being spent on an employee-only basis. So that's how that's all broken down, and essentially what happens is the carrier provides us with those rates, and that's how they're illustrated. From there, we then went ahead and we bumped up the employee contribution from 9% to 9.5%, and you're seeing that spread out throughout all four tiers. Okay. So then the last change that we looked to incorporate, you know, the city has generously provided that HSA contribution in the past, where in a sense it would fund our full deductible amount on the HSA plan. So it's that $2,800, and then for the family it was a $5,600 contribution. So essentially what we're doing is we're saying, okay, we still are, you know, recommending to provide that contribution. So on an employee basis, it's going to be the $2,800. Employee and spouse basis, it will be $2,800 plus $1,400, okay? Then employee plus child or children, same, it would be the $2,800 plus $1,400. And then for family, it would be $5,600. So instead of funding a full $5,600 on the employee and spouse and employee child, we're actually removing $1,400 of that, which is going to essentially save the city $30,000 right then and there. So what we did is we essentially took the change to the PPO plan, the way that we structured the contributions in terms of tiering, and the adjustment to the HSA plan. We created cost savings amongst all of those adjustments so that ultimately now the impact of this 5% increase to the city, which would be much less, and that's how the committee came to a point where we said, you know, ultimately, you know, here's our recommendation. We feel strongly like we've been able to make a lot of progress in the arena of wellness and encouraging employees to, you know, pursue their preventive care exam, to keep walking and moving and do all the wonderful things that employees have been engaging in. And this enables us to kind of just keep the momentum of the program that has been working. 2 years provides us with plenty of time to continue to evaluate and analyze the program that we currently have in place. And ultimately, in 2 years, if we see ourselves with an increase, we can certainly be prepared to look out to the market and, in a sense, make some adjustments if we need to at that point in time. I think that I hit on pretty much everything. I don't know if Maggie has anything to add. Thank you. So I think everything else was pretty much, you know, like we mentioned, spelled out in the memo. I don't know if you have any specific questions, but please, you know.
This was unanimous from the committee as far as.
Yeah. So I guess just to add to that, because of the plan modifications and the design changes, that 5% effectively comes 1.5% is the increase,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, right.
So
the net increase for the city, including the contributions from the employees and the increases that the employees are going with, it's really like $26,500 increase for the year, for this year and next year. And the rates will be the same for both years, then the employees will be the same for 2 years, the city's costs will be the same for 2 years. And, you know, we just felt that gives us a little bit of time on the committee to look at other options as far as different wellness programs or things like that. But right now, this wellness program seems to be working. And that's what the committee has strive to do is try to have a good wellness where the employees participate and try to help them stay healthy to keep our things moving.
With respect to that, Maggie, do we track how many claims we file every year, and has wellness impacted that in any way?
No, it's a great question. I mean, our claims are certainly tracked, and given the size of our group, we are able to retrieve overall claims, you know, information. But we do rely on our broker to provide us with analysis in that regard, and I think Ron could probably speak to that a little bit better.
Yeah, so we certainly have claims activity. What's difficult is to show savings on a heart attack that didn't happen. Right, and so, but we have claims activity, we can show the progress and, you know, what's happening, what's not, and project things forward.
Okay. I just wonder, as a percentage basis, obviously we have employees on.
Yeah, I think what I can point to is ERC health trend is half that of the traditional market. So, Bridget, I think you did a wonderful job explaining all that. And it is a preferred risk pool. So if you went into a traditional book, you're put into a pool that the carrier has. So regardless, you're in a pool, ERC Health is a preferred risk pool. You have to get accepted into the program, so inherently it just runs better, right? And so because it's based on those wellness activities that everyone's doing, and it's encouraging healthy habits, healthy behavior, because of all these things in the program, it runs at the trend that other programs do.
To add to Ron's point, I think that it's important to state that in terms of our employee engagement with the program, we did have 100% participation from everybody. Now, if you actually look at, in a sense, the sheet we received from ERC Health, it'll show 98%. The difference there being folks who are on COBRA, they're not required, you know, to participate. So that's that 2% differential. But from an employee base, we are looking at 100% participation in the program. And I think it's important, too, to remember that while this program is working for us now and we're seeing success, it doesn't mean that this has to be it. So I think that that's part of the goal for the committee in the future. You know, what we talk about is keeping our minds open to making sure that we continue to build off of this program, right? So it's not something that wellness doesn't just stop here, I guess, right? So it's kind of recreating what exactly we want that to look like, keeping in mind what we've built. And let's expand off of that, right? And that's what the committee needs to work on here.
The traction that Bridget and Chuck identified, traction that the wellness program has generated, we expect that to be enhanced. I mean, that was a priority for the committee, it's a priority for the administration as we deliver something to council to deliberate on and make a decision on. I can't say enough about Bridget coming in, as a newbie, and thank God she had a lot of experience in this arena, because it was a dynamic tension during this whole process of the deliverable. And so between Bridget and Maggie and her team and health care committee, we were able to work with Oswald and come up with this, which as a recommendation.
And you say, Bridget, there were a number of carriers that were engaged with this, because in some years we didn't have a whole lot. I think we might have had very little, you know, interest in the past, because we've gone through this a number of times. But I like the idea of the 2 years. It helps for planning-wise as far as budgetary, you know, and what we anticipate, what an employee or what their expense would be in that. So it gives us, you know, some certainty for that, for more than just the 1 year.
Play out Jim's question about, I think we were in the 70s in terms of our
loss ratio,
which is pretty good.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
we were right around the target rate. I will say that what we did see, we were trending upward towards the end here. So what that tells us is either more claims are just starting to hit our experience, or you know, we could be heading in a direction where ultimately we have people that maybe didn't see the doctor or doctor or attend to certain things due to COVID, and now they're starting to. So that's why I also think that, you know, based on the committee thinks, based on our recommendation, 2 years provides us with a good amount of time to be able to get a grasp on you know, the effects that COVID did have on our group as a whole. And ultimately, we'll be able to get an idea as to whether or not there's just been a lot of things that have kind of gone.
It's almost like fuel. Is it going to go up? What's it going to happen? So we're locking in, and we're locking in. So if council adopts this, we're locking in for 2 years. We can still work on refining it rather than having to figure out how we're going to have our next increase today.
But I notice we are changing from Anthem for dental and.
Yes.
And that
was a little bit of a sore spot, I'm not going to lie. Makes me sweat just thinking whether we received that dental renewal.
You
got
to implement that.
Oh, yes, we do. But I will say, Anthem extremely high dental renewal initially. And quite honestly, that's not even reflected right here, but the number was so high that. You know, we obviously got to get out to market right away. Where we came in more aligns with the way that our claims are running. So I think, not to get too much into the weeds, but what happens, you know, with a group of our size is the carrier's part of your quote that you receive from them or your proposal that's ran off what they call manual rates, right? So sometimes if the manuals are running really high, an offer may look very attractive. But in a couple of years, it's not going to be so attractive. And I think that maybe is what, you know, Anthem was kind of caught up to us here with this renewal. And that's why we saw such a high increase. Ultimately, we're in a place now with Guardian where our rates align very well with the entire market and also with the way that our group's running. So we feel pretty confident in where we landed. Not to mention, I think it's also important to just note that with Guardian, you have what they call a true dental carrier network. So Anthem, they're more of a medical carrier, right? We all really kind of correspond to them as medical. Guardian, this is the space that they play in. So what that means is when you go to the dentist's office and you actually have a cleaning, you know, or some sort of a filling or something completed, the actual discount that you're going to receive from Guardian versus Anthem is typically going to be a lot greater. So Guardian, in a sense, negotiates greater discounts, okay? Not a knock on Anthem, but again, it's not your space. So as long as you're in network, a lot of times you're going to see more savings from that standpoint, and I think that that's going to help everybody out, too, in the long run. So again, that's a two-year contract. The vision has remained the same. The life insurance, this is something that we didn't put a whole lot of notation on in our memo, and we were just finalizing this piece, so I do apologize, but we were able to actually get the life insurance to a place where now the non-bargaining employees can also have that $40,000 in life and AD&D coverage, just as the bargaining employees do, and the rate that we received, basically they're going to match where we were with Anthem. So essentially, we're in a good place to that regard. And we also had to add, due to our collective bargaining agreements, we get a line of duty coverage, and Guardian's also able to do that for us as well.
You can see it's very granular. Bridget can drill down, Maggie, it's really like, okay, next. Because they really do a great job. Her experience in the industry really helped navigate through this as well, to attest to.
So are they still are, because I had experience working on Marilyn Senek's estate and everything. She had purchased, you know, different insurances, and we had actually cancer insurance, and we had not been able to collect on that policy because they said that she didn't have cancer. You know, it says on death, and we've been fighting for a year and a half so we can keep the estate open. They've given us a hard time. I don't want to sit down with you because I mean, it's to the point that Marilyn's her beneficiaries, they pull their hair out. I mean, I tried calling, and they refused to use the desert. They wanted the medical, and then, of course, we're in trouble with the doctors.
And then you have a chance to sit down.
Yeah.
The team can educate the guy, do some.
Yeah, because why would you push that?
Was that what
you Yeah, sorry to interrupt you.
But Ron could.
Yeah, we routinely help employees check the public. So
you can get clearance. That's why he was trying to keep the estate open. We've had a terrible experience with them. They hung up on it. They don't return our calls. And And it's.
Was that with the Anthem or was it?
Anthem was fine, right? It was with Anthem.
One of the other ancillary.
Yes, one of the ancillary ones, Aflac being one of them. And then they just, I mean, it's, why would you, I would tell employee here, why would you put money towards a premium there when you, you know, when your family won't get the proceeds after it's all over or has to go through, you know, through a hellish-like experience? I mean, it seemed obvious what she passed away from. Yet, it's not obvious to them, so I'll have to sit down with you. That's the only reason.
Yeah, absolutely. I can look in Robin's team too, so yeah, let me check, yeah, absolutely.
He's one person that just was planning for employees that they're going to, you know, their family has to go through all that. It's not worth being look elsewhere for the premium that that's the typical of that.
Any additional education that Ryan or Bridget, Maggie can.
Yeah.
Your decision, so you can raise your comfort level.
It's not the life insurance part that we find, that was no problem. But the ones that are treated for cancer or for chronic illness, those kind of things, that's where we really seen a difficult time with the carriers on that.
Any other questions?
And I will say that we're looking at that. So MWGS, who provides us with the services for enrollment, who those lines of coverage actually go through. We have them pulling in the Aflac policy for the people who currently have Aflac, so you can just get rid of that in general. We didn't really feel good about the fact. It seemed like this Aflac coverage was kind of lingering out there, and we weren't really sure where it came from. So we wanted to kind of gain control of that, and we're in the process of doing that, if that makes sense.
As I said, Vice Mayor, we're refining. It's a constant refining process, this whole thing.
So you may not have that many, you know, experiences with that. I guess it's a specialized policy or something, so.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
If I could just add one more thing to that part of the conversation. So we did a comprehensive market search of all fully insured carriers. We got quotes from, we also did self-funding options, alternative options that were very disruptive. So, you know, Vice Mayor, to your question earlier, multiple carriers we went to with a full comprehensive market Andrew, love that visit.
Thank you.
Large claims are removed from Anthem, so what do you have a large or in an aggregate claims?
So, yeah, so a little bit different is when you're fully insured versus self-funded. You know, ultimately, we have, the way that the risk pool in a sense works with ERC Health is they're going to pull out any claim, any access in the claim over $100,000. So let's say we have a $130,000 claim, $30,000 of that's going to be pulled out and not included in our actual experience when they go to provide us with our ratings. So what we were able to do is pull out we had three large claimants over $100,000. And all together, that was, how much was the savings on the end? We had $98,951 in savings that was pulled out over that $100,000. So again.
So we don't have, I mean, we are capped.
We are capped at the 100.
We don't, it doesn't, it's not out of pocket where we put a stop loss.
No, yeah, that would more so be a self-funded plan, which we did look at, and I think it's something that it's important for us to continue to look at in the future. Is self-funded options that could be a different funding arrangement per se, where we pay the claims in-house versus having a pool that we pay, you know, just a monthly premium of. Strictly, it's a lot to explain in, I guess, just a short period of time. But ultimately, yeah, we are capped at that $100,000 mark. Anything above it, the ERC Health program pulls it out. And I will say that every carrier does technically pull out a portion of high claims for the majority. So even when you're fully insured with Medical Mutual, you know, the plan that we looked at Medical Mutual, they would actually pull any claims out over $130,000. So, you know, essentially it would have been $160,000 claim. It would have been, you know, that $30,000. But the difference is ERC stands firm on the fact that they do not put any of that excess claims dollars back into the pool. They strictly pull it out, whereas other carriers kind of trickle it back in one way or another, if that makes sense. I don't know if that helps answer your question, does it? Maybe Ron, if I answer it then.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
Yeah. Okay.
We're,
we're fully insured.
Yeah.
These things, lasers.
Yeah, that's not for us, yeah, that would be under self-funding, yeah. Which again, I think we'll see what happens these next 2 years, because it may be something that we consider doing in the future, you know. But no lasers for us, yeah.
Any other questions for the regular? Very good, excellent job, everybody, I mean, explaining, you really give it, give me some good understanding.
Thank you. And thank you to all of you and the committee, as the mayor said, it got a little heated at times, but we all got through it, so I'm glad we were able to work together.
I got that, how long has this committee been in existence, have you got a, I'm glad we have it, because you get input from the unions, you get input from our employees, it's just a good thing to have.
I still got documentation when I brought Tony Albella to the table back in 1991, so that's 31 years ago.
Yeah, because it's something that you need to have, and it's good that you're long-serving members to that committee, three-year experience in that too, but it really gives us comfort to know that, you know, the employees are reviewing that and doing what's best, not only for the city, what's best for the employees and their families and for, you know, personally in general, because that's, yeah, that is critical. I think that's more important than even salaries, is that, is having that good health services. The older you get, the more you value it too.
So when I gave you those figures before, 1.5%, that was all inclusive. That was not 13% increase on our dental. So if you actually probably factored that out, I want to say we're probably about 10% increase on medical alone with the plan design changes. Of course, because of that, you know, we're going to pay an embedded plan about 24% more on a bi-year basis.
Yeah,
it depends on how you shake those numbers out, but ultimately, yeah.
Yeah, that could all be, manipulated a little bit, so.
Yeah.
Team did a good job of.
Excellent job. And now as far as meeting those, like, you know, having the physical and all of that, that'll be spelled out, because for the employees, and then when the deadline is for that and everything.
Thank you, yes. The plan from here is to start to prepare open enrollment. So that's why too, it was important that we get this on the agenda. Thanks again for meeting on this today. So essentially, once we have, you know, approval from council, we can go ahead and start planning that open enrollment. We'd like to have meetings where all employees attend and, you know, do a really good job of educating everybody who's been on the changes. But then, you know, again, educating people on wellness and some ways to really kind of take charge of, you know, your health plan costs and, you know, when you go to the doctor, how can you kind of shop around and, you know, do that sort of thing. So education is going to be key moving forward, and we want to make sure we're engaging with everybody.
And that was one of the biggest things at all from all the different departments that were on the committee was how good ERC Health's wellness was. It had, you know, with able to get in the Amazon gift cards and all that stuff, it actually got people to go to the doctor that normally wouldn't go get a physical or go to the doctor. So it actually, you know, their wellness program helped tremendously with a lot of employees. Just, you know, and they have one of our employees was telling me how they have a, you know, he's diabetic, and they have a great program for diabetics. So, excuse me. So.
So thanks for the whole team that worked on that. I guess getting back then to the agenda, I guess we can, if everybody's ready to vote on this. So, it's ordinance number 2022-76,
sorry, rolling.
Second.
I'll call for favor.
Aye.
Aye.
An ordinance accepting the proposals for group health insurance from Anthem ERC Health for medical and prescription drug, and from Guardian Insurance for dental, life insurance, and vision coverage for all eligible and city employees for July 1st, 2022 through June 30th, 2024, revision 1.
And motion to suspend.
So second. So moved.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Motion to adopt.
Second.
So moved. Hey, Debbie, call the roll, please.
Sure. DeGeronimo?
Yes.
Grindel?
Yes.
Narduzzi?
Yes.
Togliatti?
Yes.
Tracus?
Aye.
Viverka?
Yes.
Walt Chanwicz?
Yes. And the ordinance passes unanimously. Again, thank you for your great input explanation, Bill.
Thank you, Councilman Walt Chanwicz.
Yes, Chris, for your good work.
I want to say it was a rougher committee than charter review.
Because you're working this guy, charter review, healthcare committee, and then zoning board, and that's not an easy board either. You're just in between so many people wanting to. That's why we didn't give a bulletproof test.
Chief Butler said, yeah, he said, I've been working Memorial Day and home days and everything else.
Yeah, but Chris, we appreciate, I mean, your work on this too. I guess, everyone, we talked about that liquid transfer. Is there any opposition to this? I know we.
Thank you, Ron.
Ron, thank you very much.
Thank you, I appreciate it, Council. We're very proud of working this day, so thank you for that.
Thank you.
Excellent job, thank you. Any comments on this regarding the liquor transfer?
I mean, I was just worried that maybe they were already selling stuff in the store, but I went there a couple times and they weren't. So, yeah, I tried.
Do better there, right? They cleaned it up a little bit.
I mean, yeah, I mean, they cleaned it up, but I still go back to the same thing, like there's going to be three liquor licenses on three different corners.
With the one next door, it's, I'm there early in the morning, people are lined up to go in, it does the business.
Liquor store?
Right next to my office. Liquor.
There's so there's a certain.
Yeah, I, you know what?
They're coming out with bags, I don't know if they're lottery bags.
So there's a specific bourbon that everybody's looking for, and everybody's there on delivery day.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing the foot traffic there.
Yeah, so my whole issue was just so many in a location where there could be feuding between.
Is that the same people that own the convenience store, or are those different?
It's different.
Is it so?
You know, along with what Chris is saying is, I'm challenged by it because we're bringing a license from outside the city.
Right, yeah.
And I don't think we've ever done that, I don't know if it's, like, I can't say it hasn't happened.
Right.
Where they find so many different ways to manipulate getting licenses or expanding the pool of licenses within the community, but this is the first time. My concern or my objection is the fact that we're bringing the licenses from outside.
So the Sunoco on Rockside sells alcohol, right? Beer and wine, or? So that one does, Shell does, the one at Sprague and 21 does. This would be the only service station in town that wouldn't, if they're denied.
The only thing I would do at a commission, I would just make sure that they adhere to all the different requirements, like less of billing requirements.
Under the law, I think you can't deny the license because for some of the reasons we discussed. So, I mean, if there was something specific, we could, but I don't think that, I think we overturned that the commission really.
So we don't have, I don't think you have to take any action, just
So it passed without objection.
Yeah, passed without objection.
It's beer and wine though, not liquor.
Just beer.
Beer.
Just beer, well, I understand.
Yeah.
You got domestic beer here, you got liquor across the street, you got craft in the.
Oh, yeah.
It's three different, it's such.
Different demographic.
Competition will lower the prices.
Then you can get rid of all the rest, that's beer alone.
Oh, that's right.
Then let's get a beer and wine license for the civic center.
Like customers bringing their own to the outdoor pool, just saying. It's been 36 years in my office, and that convenience, I started, really was a convenience store when we started out. I used to work across there, they have chicken, you know, I used to buy my lunch there every place.
The Hamlets, Tim and Sandy Hamlet.
Yeah, they were wondering, I mean, then after that, it's gone straight out. Yeah.
Well, then let's go.
They were the best.
Well, let's get back on the rational for JoJo Fries. Burns chopping at the bit.
Yes.
They're pretty good too. Burns chopping at the bit. He just wants to schedule another meeting.
I can say councilman once, and
then you go
council women, you know, more. But I'm still trying to say council persons. So I wanted to just jump back a little bit.
and just go higher level again, just to kind of give a brief overview of how much money we've been taking in as a city the last couple of years, what's budgeted for 2022, and that's the top line, the revenue. Pretty self-explanatory. That's all sources, and that includes high end strike force. Try not to complicate it. So, force is included in that and revenue, but it's also included in operating expenses because they do run through our books. So, they wash pretty much equal one to one, and there should be some money left over for us at the end of the year for doing that. And it's been averaging just over $100,000 a year that we've been collecting. That's not including any fines and forfeitures that we get through seizures, and that's all a separate category. But it's pretty basic. I try to just present this very basic of top line, how much revenue the city's had coming in, what we're budgeting for this year, how much money's gone out on an operating basis. That leaves you the third line. Okay, after you subtract off what the operating expenses cost us, here's what's available for both our capital and infrastructure, as well as paying our debt back. And under that is what we actually spent in cash by year of capital and infrastructure. In the 2022 budget column, it's what's appropriated. It's not what we spent yet, it's what we appropriated. And appropriation is the maximum amount that can be spent. So it's a good reflection of what could be spent in cash this year, $12.875 million. Subtract that off of the previous row, and that leaves you what's available for debt service. Now, debt service on the next row, it's all over the board because for many of those years, 17, 18, 19, and then finally at the end of 20, we changed the model. But in those years, a lot of our debt was in short-term one-year notes. So every year, they were maturing. So every year, technically, we had to borrow that money to pay those off. And so you had a lot of money coming in from borrowing, and you had a lot of money going out because you had to pay off that principal every year. So those are, it's hard to get a read on what it says debt service is because it's all over the board based on a lot of those borrowings. Now, 2021, that's a legit number based on our debt service of about $2.2 million plus. If you recall, we paid off some higher interest rate debt to at that time in 2021, we were getting 0.09% on money with Star Ohio. We were getting 0.2% for one-year notes issued by governmental entities in the city, in the state of Ohio. The most we were getting is 0.5 and 0.6% on CDs from Independence Bank. So the collective decision was made, okay, if we've got this debt out here at 3.6% and all we're getting is somewhere between 0.09 and 0.6, it made sense to pay that debt off, which we did. And you can see there's a net change in cash in each year. Again, hard to tell exactly what's from just operations because in a lot of those years, 17, 18, 19, and 20, there were borrowings to pay off the one-year notes and that affects your cash balance. Then there's a gray row there to separate. What I wanted to do in that middle section was say, okay, if I take that amount that's available for capital and infrastructure in each year, both actual 2017 to 2021, 5 years, plus what's budgeted for this year. And if we had a level debt service payment like we do here in 2022, the $2.2 million, if that was what our debt service was those past years, I wanted to give council, the mayor, anybody else listening, watching, an idea of how much would have been available then each year for capital and infrastructure. And it ranged from a low of $12 million in 2017, and then it was pretty consistent, like between 14.5 million, 16 million, and 18, 19, 20, and 21. I was going to say bless you. I guess that's a different. And then there's another gray row, and
and in the final section below, I'm saying, okay, this year we're budgeting about $10 million being available for capital infrastructure and debt service. If we were to borrow at the end of this year the $15 million that we had previously talked about, we would have debt service of the $2.2 million that we currently have, plus about another 1.3, and I put an asterisk by that because that assumes it would be 15 years, and that assumes the interest rate would be 3.5%. Fed is on a mission to increase interest rates very quickly to try to bring inflation down, so by the time the city would go out and borrow, your guess is as good as mine as to what that rate would be. But 3.5% starts the discussion to kind of get us in the ballpark to see where we are. So then if we wouldn't have that debt service for this year in 2022, but I put it like we would, and we would get the $15 million borrowed. And so that would leave us about $21.5 million available in cash for capital and infrastructure.
Yeah, that's $41.5 million you have up the total operating expenses. That's projected, or is that?
That 2022 budget column, the $41.5 million rounded. That's, I call it 22 budget. You could call it 2022 appropriation. You could call it 2022 projection.
Dollar.
Yes, that would assume spending every dollar that's appropriated. But I have to prepare the form that way because if it's appropriated, it can be spent. And so I want to, hopefully we're estimating worst case scenario with that 41.5 million, we wouldn't be spending all of that. But, and right now we are tracking well below that, but we do have some catch ups with, this is just a one page summary of the capital plan. Good question. Any other questions on that first page?
You sent out a note a few weeks ago that said that you and the mayor had looked through and worked with the department heads and that there could be a savings in the $6 million range of money not spent.
But that $6 million included a number of other options. We were going back to directors to look to cut that $41.5 million in that last column for total operating expenses 2022 budget. That was part of it. We were conceding that if we were going to ever do anything downtown with burying the utilities, that we would have to fund that through some type of TIF project, a big mega project there. So we were taking that $1 million off of the capital plan. We were doing some things like that to massage it in a number of places to get some additional funds. You're correct. All of that was not just from the operating budget. No, it was part of it, but not all.
Understood. So what did that get to the operating budget to, do you probably recall?
It's fluid. I think that's an administrative call. I don't know if all the hirings are done for this year. I think the mayor can speak to that. I've seen some interviews taking place and that to and a lot of it is to build a bench for some people that have kind of been indicated that they may be retiring in the next couple of years.
Understood.
So I think council, we've had that discussion a couple times, many times, and you're aware of that, and the budget reflects that. So that's one of the reasons that the 2022 budget and the operating expenses, that 41.5, is what it is, because for a while you're going to have some overlap. Now, I won't mention specific names if it's not out there, but you're going to have the person who's in the position right now doing it, but then if they're going to be out in another 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, whatever, and their successor, potential successor, is chosen now, you've got to pay both of them while the person B is learning person A's job. So
it's at least a couple of year transition.
Yeah. There's, it's, it is what it is.
And what was the, what did we assume for the healthcare? Because we had us at that time, now we know what, was it about in the ballpark would be the appropriate?
Yeah, because the total increase is going to be
is only phenomenally increased.
The net result with some of the plan changes that were talked to you by Bridget and Maggie and was it Ron? It's not going to be, I'm not losing sleep over medical costs for this year and next year. It's a huge component of our total cost. You know, if we've had with 35 million in income tax last year, we're projecting 33 million this year, that the gross cost before you subtract off employees' contribution to healthcare, you're at what, 2.8 is the number, 2.8 million. You're pushing healthcare is almost 10% of our income tax. And that's not on top of the pensions, and that's not on top of the wages and salaries. So healthcare, it is a major cost that we watch, but because it's not taking a huge jump, I'm not like losing sleep over that right now. It's manageable, at least within the budget that
we're going to reduce because it's already May, it's already June, actually. So
yeah, that's the worst case scenario. I think a lot of the hires we projected that they would be hired on January 1, and they haven't. So that every month that goes by, that somebody that was scheduled to be hired isn't hired, it's another month of savings in the operating budget. So I would be shocked if we came close to that 41 million, but right now that's what's appropriated. So that's the figure I have to use in the spreadsheet. The sheet you have next, it's just a one-page summary. Maybe and I are still kind of take assimilating all of the comments made, especially with Engineer Ram here, because that's the last number of meetings we finished off with in April as far as infrastructure. And the 2022 number, you can see total capital and infrastructure real estate, 13.2 million. But then reading across, we're still at 26.5 on rounding it for 2023 and 18.0 for 2024. And I initially threw out like, okay, what would it look like if we borrowed 15 million? And that would get us through $15 million worth of projects. It's 15 more million than we'd have if we didn't borrow. But the question was raised, like, okay, that gets us through 22 and 23, but you know, 24 is looking pretty healthy too. And then 25 and 26, at least for now, start to go down. But we all have to admit that's a couple years out in all the departments, and we're not that dialed in the further out to go. It's like a weather forecast. You think the next day pretty good, the day after pretty good, but you start giving that 10-day forecast, the further out you go, it's a little less reliable. I think we could all stipulate that, and it's the same with the capital plan, where the further years you get out, it would just get harder and harder to be exact and exact. But hey, there's numbers there. It starts the discussion, and that's where we are right now. So I said, okay, if go back to sheet one, if we're going to generate about 10 million internally, that's available for capital and infrastructure, and we're going to borrow 15 this year, that leaves us with 21.5 million roughly to work with. So what does that result in going forward? Do you have this sheet? Did I give you this third one under there? So this is the last one. It's the last one.
We can
it starts with that estimated 21.5 million available at the top of the page here. And it, I'll walk us through, and it's very, very linear. It's not very complicated. We got 21.5 million to work with at the end of this year, assuming that we borrow 15 million. Then you get that second sheet, that summary sheet. If I go to the 2022 column right now, it's 13.2 million that's scheduled for 2022. So 21.5 million minus 13.2 million, we have about 8.3 left over that we carried over to 2023, because in theory we borrowed this 15 million. And then in 2023, if just let's say numbers hold flat, our revenue doesn't go up, but our revenue doesn't go down, our expenses kind of stay within range, and we're able to generate, say, 10 million left for capital and infrastructure. So if we carried 8.3 million over and we had 10 million that we were going to generate in 23, that'll give us about 18.3 million to work with next year. But you can see on the second page, I passed out, 2023 column is 26.5 million. So subtract that off, and now we're short 8.2 million by the end of next year. And you go into 2024, okay, generate another 10 million. Just I'm throwing a number out that's kind of rooted in the past. It doesn't project any great optimism. It doesn't project any great pessimism. It's just a number that we're using to project to walk you through the process here. We started out 24 with an 8.2 million deficit for available for capital infrastructure, not a structural deficit. And we were going to generate another 10. That would give us about $1.8 million to work with in 2024. But that 2024 column sitting at 18.0 million. So subtract off 18 from 1.8 million. And by the end of 2024, we really need, if we wanted to implement the capital, the CIP plan as it currently sits right now, only through 24, not only do we need that 15 million that we talked about, but we need another 16.2 to really do everything that we want to do in 22, 23, and 24. And that's, do the math, 15 plus 16.2 is $31.2 million. And that's an eye-popping number. I think we need to talk more. You don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that. Nobody wants to hear about, oh, we have another capital. But something's got to give. Either we've got to keep massaging this capital plan down to something more realistic, or we have to acknowledge we have to borrow out millions and millions and millions of dollars to do everything we want to do right now. I'm not going to say it's not possible. I'm just saying that we got a little over $20 million in debt right now, and if we borrow another $31 million over the next couple of years, we're putting ourselves at a debt level of $50 million, and I just don't think that's really realistic.
Well, we're unvoted debt. I mean, voted debt, if we...
Well, that was an option we talked about last time. That's okay. Go to the voters and say, look, we can't fund all this internally. The school's got a PI levy. Maybe we can put a PI levy. We're here to talk.
The other thing, too, is with inflation going up, I mean, these amounts might not even be accurate.
We've tried to acknowledge a little bit of inflation in there. I think, you know, the engineer's office the best they can, but who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
And the interest rates. I mean, the interest rates is trending upwards, too, and that's another
term. I think we're in a rear reckoning because so many people in this country, credit card debt, trying to tie to the prime rate. Prime rate's tied to the Fed funds rate. So every time the Fed announces another half a point increase in the Fed funds rate, your credit cards are going up. Anybody that has a home equity line of credit, a lot of people do. It's how you've been paying cash for cars and kids' education and stuff. You know, not everybody had all that cash. They're just pulling the equity out of the house. All those loans are variable. As soon as the prime goes up, as soon as the Fed funds rate goes up, your line of credit rate, the home equity loan rate goes up. There's going to be a day of reckoning coming pretty soon.
First time they had a recession. That's the first 3 months of the year was the first time since 2008. We've had 3 months in a row of people missing credit card payments in large numbers.
What was that?
Credit card debt. People haven't been able to pay off their cards first 3 months of the month. I don't have the April data.
When interest rates were zero, not everybody, but it was easier to do. Now that interest rates are going north, every month the Fed kicks the rates up another half point, and they haven't even taken 0.75% off the table. The consumer's going to feel the pain. They're feeling it at the gas pump. They're feeling it at the grocery store. They're feeling it everywhere. And wages aren't going up as fast as prices are and as fast as interest rates are. So, we're just projecting, the economy is going to stay kind of the way it is, but if you really want to be conservative, you got to think something's going to give here. Well, I don't know how people can be paying $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 for a basic car, $450 a gallon for gas. Everything was just getting outrageous. Houses, I didn't even buy a house anymore.
I just, Mary, I remember back late, like 2007, 2008, you were going through a similar type of downturn. I remember when you took office that time after Fred, and you had facing some real deficits too. And that's, I mean, the site is cyclical, and I think we just have to, our needs for infrastructure, that doesn't go away. I mean, that's, and you pay the piper, you pay it now, you're going to pay it even more so 2 years down the road. So, I mean, that's the dilemma that we're in. We can't just let that, we got to keep pace with our needs, for the things that Don works on as far as the sewer lines, the water lines, the roads. I mean, it just so.
Kick the can down the road and we end up being like that section of, Ridgewood between State Road and Ridge Road.
But they just ground all that out.
Well, today. After how many years?
Now, see, that's from Broadview Estates. Yep, they grounded the whole thing out.
Yeah, it was quite a day because here's the last, ARMA did not either have the money or allocate the money, so they were beholden to Cuyahoga County to do that job. And they were beholden to outside sources of funding. And if you're beholden to outside sources of funding, you don't call your shot. Somebody else does. The county does. ODOT does. The federal government does. They hold purse strings.
I like the idea of the Downs Institute as far as, putting the seal on the different things on the roads shortly after they're reconstructed, so you kind of hopefully prolong their life more than just, the 15, 20. You want to prolong their life as long as you can. And I think they did looking at the street island on Wood. I mean, that was 1999, I think, or 98, that was work. And it still looks, to this day, Sunset and Elmwood still look pretty decent, even though it's 20 years plus and everything. So, because of the maintenance we do. And I think excavating did that job, if I'm not mistaken. And they did, you can tell at the time, it was a really good job, too. So, you pay for your good construction. It pays off in the 2-3 decades that you look back at it, so.
Vice Mayor, I think, and Council, I think Bryn did a wonderful job explaining.
It's a realization.
Everyone sees
it. Yeah. Well,
I don't know if it's bad.
It's realistic, though.
Be thankful we're in a position where you're still talking $10 million without, that's a lot of money. I mean, 10, 20 years ago, that was a lot of money. So everything's relative.
But if you're going to borrow, it wouldn't make sense to borrow now and the rates. I mean, who knows what the rates are going to be in next year, 2 years from now, or does that make sense? Do we just
I'm challenged to think about the $15 million. That's realistic. The additional $16 million. That's it's not in my sphere of reality. I think we at some point we have to look at what we want to do and what do we need. We always have that balance. We need to make certain repairs to our infrastructure. That's a need. But we have a number of wants and projections. I think Don's done a real nice job of trying to always give us a projection in some of these more critical areas. If you think about Drexville Road, I sat there and watched on Drexville Road go up to Brockside. That section needs to be done at some point. And so there's needs and wants, and defining and refining this. And then you have to ask yourself the question, how do we generate additional revenue? Well, some of these projections, some of the discussion we had that later in the afternoon yesterday, where we talked about what we have and what ideas and what we can do, and the brain power around this room, the experience around this room, should be able to tie something together that we can at least act on or project with in terms of our uncut diamonds, I'll call them, those five areas. And then we have our major capital projects, I call them capital structural projects, whether they be a service garage, a police department, the civic center, the infrastructure on the campus, let alone the Northwest Quadrant and a few other of those major opportunities. that's facilities, just facility. We don't talk about those when we talk about our major capital improvements. Most of those focus on roads and sewers and those. And then we talk about the, I call it internal capital, the different equipment we need to plan for, project with. And then we get down to the operating budget. And we need manpower, and we're going through this transition phase where we need to have a bench, to build a bench. So we're too sophisticated, too large to be able to just lose some money with all experience and talent, and all of a sudden not have somebody in tow to be able to keep things going. No matter who's mayor is, or any council, that's our job to at least have the, as we were talking to a couple of the volunteers that were, they're going to run the 1x400 and 2x400 in the regional districts, I think.
The boys and girls won the districts in May.
Right, so the preliminary is in tomorrow. Or
the 4x800 will be a final tomorrow.
That's
and then, the rest of the meet tomorrow is preliminary.
So, and the whole point is we talked about, and it's like, go back to the handoff. I mean, we have to hand this off to the next administration, the next council, the next, so that at least we have something of substance in the history of why we did what we did. And so, okay. Vern, thanks again. This was, I think it's educational as well. And it narrows down the scope of the what if. So now we have to decide, do we borrow money? Do we stick with where we're at? Do we, in terms of the revenue side of it, and then if we make that decision, then we can go back and start to figure out what we're going to trim. Because if we're not going to borrow money, then it becomes more of a defined, very definite way of, okay, here's what we're doing. If we're going to borrow some money, then we can expand that. And it's already June, so I think some of this will be bleeding over into the next year and following year. So. But it's the combined brain power on this room should certainly give us an opportunity to do something.
Man, I agree with you. I think we should look at it as a two-year, this year and next year, make some of the decisions for, because I think the way, like I say, just the way the world activities are going and everything else, I think we need to be proactive and get moving in this way, take care of things this year and next year as far as the, if we're going to borrow or what projects we're going to work on. And you see what the trends are later in the year, but I mean, as far as what's been going on in Europe, the way our country is sending money by the bushel, so they don't even know if it's being used by Ukraine or there's some of the politicians skimming off the top. I mean, that's when you, the more you watch, the more upset you get, and that you know, it's just, I don't know if we have a plan. Our country has a plan, and the way they're bringing in people over the border, they're hopping over here by the tons and everything. And they're shipping them all around the country. It just gets you, you know. I know you say, well, how does that affect independence? But it does affect, I mean, it affects the whole country.
I mean, we're paying all that money for gas.
Yeah.
And, parents came and go to a store and buy formula for their infants.
Yeah.
I mean, stuff's not going to get any better. I mean, we looked at yesterday's air handler estimate that they've got. In 30 days, it went up $10,000.
Yeah. I just talked to a vendor today who supplies some of our trucks and our equipment. They won't even honor a state purchasing price guarantee anymore. Mm-hmm. Some of these vendors are saying it'll be when we deliver, and it doesn't. There's no more deliveries in 2022. So you're talking, you know, Kubotas, you're talking some of this equipment that, and so it's so volatile. It's not just the public sector, it's the private sector,
yeah, too. Given what we see, I mean, I still think we really, and kind of what we were just talking about, I think we need to put together a hybrid approach, some belt tightening, actual cuts, perhaps, if things aren't as high a priority, it's just reality check. I mean, that's what our residents are doing. The city's got to do the same thing, you know, borrowing as minimal amount of money as we can, I think, just to see how this thing goes out. But then also, equipment purchases, and you know, it'd be nice to get a new this vehicle, but is it necessary? You know, so I think those types of things, which are long term, so maybe we do this on a monthly basis and just kind of come up with it. It's almost like a 2-year budgeting type process where we really take a look and take a fine tooth comb into every part of it, city government,
obviously growth is a big part of that. So if you have growth, then you don't have to do as much of the belt tightening, but I think you kind of have to do a little of all of it, just get sharp pencils out and kind of find out where we're going to be. I mean, I think you're really right. Interest rates aren't going to get lower. Next year won't be a cheaper money that we get. And now you're really adding to the cost of the projects by another, you know, percentage because we're borrowing money for those and then we have to pay them back. So it's all...
It depends how long of a time frame we're looking at. Because I granted this is residential mortgage business, but their interest rates follow our interest rates. And Liberty Mortgage, a very successful mortgage company, bought a building on Oak Street Boulevard a couple years ago. And like all mortgage companies, they're having challenges right now because nobody's refinancing anymore because rates have gone up. And there's been so little inventory on the market that there's a plethora of sales. So they're not originating as much mortgages. But the CEO, the owner of that company, is acknowledging the tough times in the next couple of years, but he predicts by 24, 25 that the peak of interest rates will hit, the Fed will be cutting interest rates, mortgage rates are going to fall, and there's going to be another refinance, but that his business is going to be back flying high. And so I think he's right. I think interest rates are going to continue to go up through 2022 as long as the Fed keeps raising rates. But at some time, at point, they're going to peak, and the Fed's going to have to start nudging them down. So if we were looking at borrowing, we'd be kind of hitting it, unfortunately, on that up cycle. Let me just suggest this at 5:17 here. If maybe the mayor can get together with Don tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, one of those days, a couple hours, block of time off, and really look at that 22, 23, 24 infrastructure projects and really, really have an honest conversation about, are these needs or are these wants? Does this project really need to be done in 22, 23, or 24? Or is it, yeah, hey, we want to do it? And that could get us a long way toward knowing how much we're going to need to borrow. Because if some of these things can go to the right in years without material negative impact on our infrastructure, then I think that's a legitimate way forward. That we could combine kind of what you would say, Councilperson Triggers, separate, and I think, you know, Councilperson Tyler, you mentioned the past two, needs versus wants, and if we separate these projects into those categories and have those hard conversations, and they're painful and they're difficult, but that's why we ran for the jobs we did, because nobody else wants to do this work. Nobody else wants to be the one that have to allocate that scarce capital. But we do, and we're going to do it. And then we could go maybe next Tuesday again, then the mayor can come to you and say, okay, we sat with Don, we sat with the directors. Here's what we narrowed down based on these economic realities. Nobody wants to borrow $31 million, but we only put $10 million in the capital infrastructure every year for the next couple of years. We may or may not be leaving ourselves short.
Our assumptions are sound. I mean, that is reality.
Yeah. Vern, what's the potential interest rate right now? If you were to go out and get your $15 million right now, what rate potentially is out there tomorrow?
I'm 3.5 based on what was today's, May 24th. That was valid a couple weeks ago. I don't think there's been a huge spike since then.
Okay.
The U.S. Treasury kind of even backed off a couple basis points.
So take your 3.5% times your $15 million. So what's your debt service just on the new debt?
Well, the principal and interest is $1.3 million. And that's where I added the 1.3 to the 2.2 that we're paying now.
So that would be
new debt service, 3.4, 3.5 million if we were to borrow.
So I'm saying, so what we're saying is the additional indebtedness, what we'd have to pay out of the money potentially that we would have for projects, we would lose 1.3 million besides. Is that a
correct
statement?
And that was one of the reasons for doing the one spreadsheet to show you, okay, if our debt service goes up a little bit, very good question, then that's going to leave us that much less in capital infrastructure. So you either wait and do it over time or you borrow some money and
get it up front, and then you have less to work with. But it's the same like auto insurance. You save money for a house to pay cash, or you get a 15, 20, or 30-year mortgage, and then you have that much cash flow for that period of time, less out of your income to pay your bills.
You don't enjoy it while you're doing it.
And how about some of those, like the fire department has those long term that we're putting money aside to, those, like, can we?
5 to 7 years, normally what we.
Can we squeeze another couple more years with proper maintenance care of that?
I believe so.
Is it worth looking? I mean, look at all the trucks, I mean, the trucks, it seemed like one of the first years I was on council, you hardly buy them. The trucks seem like now, the last number of years.
We disciplined ourselves the last couple of years, to get some equipment.
Yeah.
Upgrade some of the equipment, so we should look at how we stretch, how we find some balance. Yeah.
Right, well, that was the question that I had, was related to the motor pool and what particular parts of it are legitimately ones that can be stretched. I mean, you don't wanna be to the point of you have to put way too much money in it. But on the other hand, you don't want to trade or basically give away a vehicle that you maintain along the way that still should be decent. Whether it be a police cruiser or a tandem axle or whatever.
I think we're all committed to being financially responsible. I don't see anybody here that doesn't want to be. And stretching the life of our vehicles is a way that's done out in the industry. Looking at people who own businesses with a lot of capital equipment. But we've got to find the art of finding where the line is of stretching it just too far. Because we have this one word in our vision statement, where we want to be a premier community. You start stretching vehicles out, you start stretching infrastructure projects out, your roads start looking bad, your equipment starts looking bad, it calls into question then, are we still a premier community? So there's a fine line there somewhere, and it's an art finding it.
And we've also been we've had the lowest tax rate of any municipality or any cities and everything. But Greystone has any problems, those people, when they ante up for the schools and everything, they have the mindset that their courses might be a different, their income might be different than the people in Independence overall and everything. But sometimes the city can do so much, but you have to maybe pay a little more tax if you want to, just like anything else. People don't want to hear that, but yeah.
I don't know if they wouldn't pay more if they know exactly what
they're doing. Right. Well, you have to make the case for it. That's why
you gotta make the case.
See Marshall's latest revenue raising technique?
Yeah.
No. And to sell passes to their community center to non-residents. Don't even have to work in the community. They're capping it at 500, but it's like $700 for people to go
out. Let's set it up.
Yeah. So you want to do it?
No.
I don't know the answer to this. When was the last time we had to borrow for infrastructure projects?
Rockside Woods North.
So yeah. So that was what, like 3 or 4 years ago? We did that. What did we borrow for that project?
Yeah, Stu and I have a disagreement about that. It's so complicated to calculate.
There was a bunch of reassessments.
More than that. Yeah, yeah. Like 20.
I thought it was closer to 20 myself.
Was it close to 20?
Well, there was three different borrowings, wasn't there, for different phases of the project?
It was one borrowing, I think it was slightly over 10.
Yeah. That was back, what, probably like 16 or 17?
$12 million back in 1999. And that was, then we did that for the Rockside Road project. Then we got, so we're not bashful about it. We paid it back. And
that was a project. We always wait for roads and
Last structural levy we had was for the Civic Center. That's facilities. Now, yeah, because we borrowed all $15 million for those shared use facilities.
Well, and we've been in those discussions where whatever we do, and nobody's talking about going to the voters right now, fighting the city, but you know, the school district is next year. They're gonna, I'm sure that's their first opportunity to renew that emergency operating levy, and you heard it when they were here. They're not just gonna renew it because the renewal amount won't pay enough. For instance, it's gonna be the renewal amount, which is 8 or 9 mils, plus whatever they're gonna tack on to that.
Yeah. So as I told them, they should concentrate on that first, and then even a bond, because if you don't have, you get the bond, if you pass that, then you fail with your operating levy. It's,
that's what happened. Well, what is it? I'm not sure I've heard a consensus or a direction relative to the proposal, but with respect to these new schools of this body. And so in my conversation with Ben, it was kind of like, I better just pull the reins in, because I'm not sure that the city is comfortable with your proposal this time. So, unless I missed by the tea leaves, that's what I, yeah, the question I got through the statements. Okay. So it's easy to know what we won't accept. I'll figure out what can we live with. You know, using our property, exchanging property, sharing things of that nature, infrastructure, that's whole, that goes back to that whole campus upgrade. Whether we tie it to a civic center, or we tie it to some school upgrade. That's
not a community that did a combined issue. We were told we couldn't.
Yeah, it's
not a community.
Yeah, we just saw the $232 million levy.
You just have to delineate what village goes to which entity.
So it's pass fail. So you're saying, yeah, if the city and the school were these two tie as one, and you define so many mills to this, so many mills to this, which should be so much money, you can combine it.
That's correct.
People vote yes or no for the whole thing.
Correct.
Well, that may
and,
be,
and some people put separate levies on, and one passes and the other doesn't, and then they're kind of stuck because they don't know what to do. Right?
Well, that's it for against each other. Because if we, I gotta believe that if we tied something to the campus, to the civic center, that would support the school. So that would upgrade the chances for the school, not even the school.
I'm just thinking the more joint use you can do that eventually lowers costs, you know. So it's like these are all tax dollars, whether it's school tax dollars or city tax dollars. Our citizenry looks at it as tax dollars. So whatever you can do to try to flatten that cost structure, I think beneficial. To
well, they flatten it, just stretch it out.
Bern, I'm sorry, on the schedule here, I mean, I like the presentation with the cash basis, but just looking at a five-year window, you know, the big item with the infrastructure and the street projects, I mean, that's the big number. And I don't know, are we looking at a five-year window where just a lot of things are hitting right now? Or Don, you said, like I heard it would say like over a 30-year life of a project, you know, are we at the high end of something, or do you think we've been at the 10 to 15 million and it's never been quite enough? Because that's what I've heard in these, we've pushed it. So even, we've pretty been flat.
It's never enough.
It's not like we're going to be.
Look, we took Rockside Road from 2 lanes to 6 lanes. There, we didn't have Linden Lane and all these new subdivisions.
That's future life. Yeah, that's another.
Every time we accept a new roadway, the clock starts ticking. When the day comes, we're going to have to at least do some repairs and then some replacement. We're a community that does not assess for infrastructure projects like that. And I know there are communities that do that. That's how they manage it. Sometimes with a more limited income stream that we have, they force that the people who own the property.
We've never
sewers.
Last time we assessed it, we did two sewer bill issues back in the 60s and 70s, because if that we were to rent, they cut off our building permits.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to. But that was, but we assessments for the Rockside Woods North, for the West Street, I think, for those, but we haven't done assessment for, I think, Northwest Squadron would be
more. 283 and 84, was that an assessment or not?
Oh, we didn't,
didn't do an assessment.
So that's a.
No, I can't. No, the only ones we've done assessment for commercial properties, Rockside Road area.
And we did 2.1 mil operating money back in the early 80s.
Yeah, maybe that was.
That expired in 87. That's when we went to the extra half percent income tax. And we only passed that by 6 votes, I believe. That was like better than the Civic Center of 32 votes. It's a landslide, 32 votes. What the heck?
Now, Mayor, when you do your reviewing with the department heads and whatnot, you have to take into consideration, you know, the Northwest Grant. Do we invest money into that? Do we want to be prepared if an opportunity comes and we were asleep at the switch and everything, and it'll go to somewhere else because we're not ready.
That did happen when we had the opportunity to bring that company from that went over the next to Eaton over the Highlands, Sherman Highlands.
Fair.
They really were excited about coming from Fairlawn, I believe, to McDonald's until they actually came and saw those three restaurants would be the view they would get from their corporate headquarters. They said, no. I think we need to at least do something with engineering this year with respect to the beginning phase of the Northwest Quadrant.
We can't be short-sighted and not be prepared when the opportunity arises.
That means to me preparing ourselves so that if someone says, hey, I've got some hot opportunity, that at that point we at least know we got the engineering, we have the wetland delineation, we have the infrastructure, we know exactly where the utilities are going. At least we're that sophisticated. Right now it's okay, we can start. No, let's be in the game is what I'm saying.
Yeah, that makes some sense.
Those are good investments. That's what I say, investments, right? That's what I'm saying, kind of money you put into the soft cost money, but it really prepares you for that to be able to leap faster. If you already have your plans ready.
No, look at what Intel, it was just virgin land, and it was easy, you know, and that's what they wanted. They wanted easy. Why didn't they come up here? There's not enough parcels you can string together to do what they did in Licking County. So you got to make it easy, and you got to be flexible and quick.
That's why I think if we can get that accomplished this year, that can have people focused on that in school position.
When will the office project be coming about 3 years from now? Or?
Yeah, it's like 2023.
So that's why I'd like to be ready that if we could get some ancillary business on
it. I think we can. I think we can be aggressive about it too. I mean, they're looking for that. And maybe if you partner with higher education, we work with like the Akron Power Institute or Kent, they've got the digital, you know, institute. I mean, there's parts that they're going to be needing research-wise and high-tech manufacturing. That
the Northwest Quadrant is positioned to be able to do something.
Yeah.
To take advantage of that. So
I think we have to look in the future. Some of the needs are going to be a few years down the road than relying on a hotel. Maybe a hotel. I mean, that's
gone.
Yeah, that's gone. Office, big office buildings, not the ways of the future.
I met one of our state senators yesterday, and she and kind of like said, you know, this isn't helping us.
Nature's the capital will today. We don't know what's in it yet, so we'll find out if we got anything.
So, yeah, they don't care about us. Getting back to Jan's comment, I think it would be a good exercise for us to refresh the Manikin Smith roadway study. Because they did a complete inventory of the condition of all of our roadways. They laid out a construction schedule by year, costs, estimated costs with each year, and what maintenance should be done. And there was a peak, and then it plateaus to where you're spending minimal dollars, maybe in the hundreds of thousands of dollars per year maintaining your roadways. And if I truly believe if we would have stuck with their schedule, that a lot of these roads would have been done by now, and we could be on this maintenance path. But things got deferred and kicked down the line, as they tend to do. So,
what year was that they did that?
2017.
15?
17?
5 years.
5 years. So we're on a 5 year cycle now.
Yeah, we've had a
three the year.
Yeah, it's tough when money's unavailable. Not sure the economy's changed too, so
we're trying to be fair.
Sort of an assessment to do
a lot of things, very narrow. And they gave a great presentation.
And the state routes were not included in that, thinking that because of ODOT participation. So we talk about Rexville Road.
But we can pull that out, because if it didn't include the state routes, then that's just blow a hole in the whole, report.
Well, that's probably good for identifying conditions if they rate in like school, A, B, C, D, fail. But I don't know if those kind of reports factor into the entity's ability to pay, because they could say, hey, you should do all of these roads on these five-year sequence, but if they're not digging into the money and seeing what money's available, then it's just a plan.
That's more of what they do. It's all fairness to that, it's what they, those projections are based on.
It was a very
condition of being served, not the conditions of our financial situation. I'm with you.
No, do you know what, how much that study cost? $65,000, $75,000? Was it more than that?
Since I knew. I was thinking 20-30.
But I could be wrong. It's been so long. And I know they offered a 2-year refresh, 3-year refresh, where it would be a cheaper maintenance.
I don't recall that either. I'll have to revisit that.
Can you look into it?
You're sitting around here all these meetings.
Then I guess you got to go.
I should stop coming.
The other thing says, oh, I'm here too.
From your perspective, if you were to go out in the bond market, which it looks like we're going to have to, when do you have to know what you need?
I don't think we need a half year lead time. Council pull the trigger in the month of June, sit with Matt and the legal counsel, and by the end of the summer, I'm sure something could be effectuated. The question is, what strategy? Do we just immediately borrow long term, lock our rate in, or do we take a chance at kind of the model that was employed here a couple of years ago? Short term 1-year bands are cheaper than a 15-year, so maybe we borrow a 1-year band and renew them, and then as the interest rates peak in 24, 23, and they come down, then we pounce and lock them in. That's to be discussed once we decide if we're going to go to borrowing now. So, not easy decisions, but both things. We could do some short, we could do some long.
We should make it a 2-year this year and 23, because we're all going to be here over the 2 years. Really, so, at least.
But all we can commit, so anyway.
Yeah.
Really?
But I think you almost kind of have to, because that's your cycle in a sense. I think that 2 years budget cycle makes sense.
Well, we don't have the ability to do any of the capital projects this year, because I don't think we have engineering completed on Lieber, Longano, Brookside.
For next year, 22 engineering, 23
ideal construction. And those are the high dollar
right up. But the Dalebrook's
covered by.
Yeah. And I know Dalebrook we did in 2000, wasn't it? We did the total rebuild at that time. We put the sidewalks in.
Of course, we changed the anyway engineer. How we do the larger, storm sewers. That's what we learned over time.
Yeah.
Don't click the trees underneath the wires.
We're getting better.
Yeah, right.
Every year, that's all you can do is get better.
Tom, how much was the Dalebrook one? Was that mill and till, or?
That's a total replacement.
It's a reconstruction, water main replacement.
Yeah. The water main.
Storm sewers have their calcification problems, so I was thinking it was going to be the other day. It was projected to be a large expense.
I'll get with that. I'll go over that.
We'll try to see. Dalebrook, you don't want it?
No. So remind me.
15 million or something?
3.25 plus 3.25, that's 6.5. Plus 3.4, so that's like 9.9.
Yeah.
Plus
2.4,
so
10, 9,
9, 9, 4, 12, 3. Yeah. One sub, 12 million lots right there. Today's prices.
Does anyone know how many homes are back there?
131.
131.
He only knows that because he gets through.
So that's, let's see.
That's exactly how many.
100,000. 100,000 a house?
No, there's only $400, half a million for $400. I mean, I don't study. Studying is a bad formula on finance.
Was that? That might be a lot. $100,000, we think. Explain that one.
So based on the deal, Brookside is a bargain.
Another way to say it, that is.
For house, you know.
That's funny.
You think at least the whole Brookside.
No, it's not funny.
But the other thing, I think we also need to communicate pretty soon. I think we have, but I think we also need to communicate to our residents that it is not inexpensive to do this the way we're doing it and to have the best quality. If you talk about Premier, what it costs to do Premier.
Well, you're right, because even some of our neighboring communities, they don't do it like we do.
Yeah, talk about all the different.
They don't have, they still have ditches, they still have.
You said Indian granite.
Yeah.
Oh.
Let's go to Europe and use that.
You know, maybe some of these young families that have been moving in are more open to investing back into their community compared to some of our senior.
Well.
Communities changed.
You know, residents. So, I mean, they spent all this money to build these big houses and buy these big houses, they're vested, you know. Those are the ones that are gonna vote for the schools.
They want great schools.
You know.
They want good service, they look, they like to have nice services, nice park setting, they want trails, they want all these good things.
Gentlemen and ladies, I got grass to cut tonight and tomorrow. Rain Thursday, I'm going to the regional track meet Friday, so.
Fair enough, Friday.
Tomorrow.
Thank you for your.
Motion to adjourn discussion.
We got a motion to adjourn here, and a second, just all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Vern, thank you.